Hi, my name is John Kim. I'm a therapist who went through his own rebirth many years ago, and I've been documenting my journey ever since, sharing my life lessons and revelations. I believe in casual over clinical, with you instead of at you. I come unrehearsed on purpose because self-help doesn't have to be so complicated. All right, I want to tell you a quick story. When I was a screenwriter, there would be days that I lose an entire, you know, half of a screenplay. Oh, you're a screenwriter now. Right. So we have a lot of parallels, by the way. And I would fucking go crazy. And then I would tell myself I was meant to lose those pages because something better is going to come out of this. Mm-hmm. And it's the only way that I could get myself to calm down, because when you grind and you're writing, you know, 12 hours a day, and you lose it all. This is before there were clouds, right? This is when you're just typing shit on Word and you save it to your desktop. There was no such thing as clouds. And so I used to lose, you know, 30, 40, 50 pages of a screenplay. And when I did that, or my computer would crash or whatever, I would just trust that I was meant to lose those pages so I could start over and it's going to be better. And Joe, as hard as it is, I think we have to both approach that mindset, because Joe and I have been talking for like, what, 16, 20 minutes, and we lost the whole thing. It wasn't recording.
Mm-hmm.
So
that conversation was genuine. So, you know, I think it was good anyways.
It was good, but I think it was, the warm up. I think it was the runway. I think it was what we needed for now this to be the episode. And that's, of course, me choosing to believe that, or else I'm going to get frustrated and not want to do it anymore. Joe, quickly tell us who you are and why you're here.
Hi, I'm Joe Akira. I'm a film director and actor from Los Angeles, California. And I know Mr. John Kim here. I knew him when I was 12 or 13. I ended up being a rambunctious little kid and started smoking weed and drinking very young. And then my mom sent me to rehab. That's where I met John Kim.
Yes, and you forgot to call me beautiful, because on the first take you said that I was a beautiful man.
I remember that, yes.
Hey, who do you know still from those days? Because so Joe is now 27, which blows my mind, but it makes sense because I'm now almost 50. And when I was working with Joe in rehab, I was like 35, 36. I was in my 30s. Yeah.
Hair just like this. You were just biceps.
I think they look big through the eyes of a 12-year-old, but I had just found CrossFit. Like, Joe didn't know, but I was going through a divorce. All he did was he saw this Korean guy who thought it was really cool with the short spiky hair.
Cool,
you know,
bar,
wearing cutoff shirts and CrossFitting. And then I had I had one of those little 2-seater BMW roadsters that, cause my brother worked from BMW. So I had one of those with the sport package. And so he probably thought, oh, who's this cool guy? But I wasn't cool. I was going through a rebirth, and I was, lonely and trying to find myself. And a lot of either what you're going through now or what you started going through maybe about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that's where I was. Who do you remember, or who do you, well, first of all, do you still keep in touch with any of those people?
I'm friends with a couple of them on Facebook.
Okay.
I stayed in contact with Dustin, Alberto, and Emily for a little bit.
Yeah.
And Dustin ended up, they might be married now, but they got together.
So on Facebook, I see that she has babies.
Oh, I wonder if Dustin is the
I don't know whose they are, but I think she has two babies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I know them. I remember them. You know what I remember about you? You had a very big personality I think you were the youngest, and you were the, like physically the smallest.
Don't want by far. Yeah.
I mean, what was his name? Not Dustin, but, there was a guy that was like huge, man. Like, he got into fights.
Kyle, the football player?
Yes. So like, you compared to him, right? That was like day and night.
It was like Dwayne the Rock Johnson versus Kevin Hart.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I was afraid of Kyle. I mean, I wasn't really afraid of like physically, but I was afraid because he would be someone that like just randomly just like start fighting, you know?
Yeah, he had that anger.
He had that anger thing.
He was your client, right?
Yeah. We shouldn't say who my clients are, but we're just using first names, so no worries. But yeah, I mean, basically, a lot of the people that we're just talking about, there were a lot of them were my clients. And I remember you because you were adorable. I connected to you because you were Asian, right? You were you're Japanese, correct?
Yes, sir.
Because there was also another kid named Blue. I think he was half Asian.
Yeah, he was only there for a little bit, right?
Yeah, he was only there for a little bit.
Multiple times.
And then there was Eugene Eugene, and he was Korean. So I really connected to you guys because you were Asian and you know the stereotype, because when I grew up, Asian kids were like all, you know, straight A's, never got into trouble, never did shady shit. And so it was a new generation. And there were a lot of Asian kids here. So I really felt connected and wanted to like help. But I remember you because you were very spunky. And I think the way you tried to connect to me was through SART. So you were the kid that always made fun of me. And I knew that was, I just think that was your way of connecting. Like you would make fun of everything, you know, my walk, my hair. Oh, you like this or that or that. And why did you make fun of me so much?
I will say this, John, I thought you were the coolest badass motherfucker ever. You like I said, you had like, I thought you were just super ripped, biggest arms, cool hair, cool car, all the other like female counselors, like John so hot, all the girls are like John so hot, you know? And then there's a story going around that you like dated Paris Hilton. I don't know if that's true.
No,
that's
not true.
But I was like, he's like what I want to be when I grow up. So like, I think I internalized that and kind of like started poking at you.
Yes.
So you to give me attention.
Right? Yeah. And that's
a good father figure.
But no one there had, no one in that rehab, and I was there for 5 years, had a present father. So either dad was at home but emotionally gone, or dad was physically not present. And because of that, I think the boys were thirsty for a male role model or someone they could, have a mentor or just look up to or have conversations with. And then I think the girls, a lot of girls there were physically and sexually abused, right? So a lot of the girls stood too close. They didn't know anything about boundaries or – and so one of my takeaways from that whole OA experience was, fuck, we live in a fatherless nation, you know, like there is, and the impact of that. And so I started thinking about my own life, and yeah, my dad was home, but he was never around. He was always working, and he was also an alcoholic. So, yeah, man, when I was your age, so when I was 12, not your age now, when I was 12 or 13, I used to idolize the, not the girls, but the boys who were, you know, on the BMX bikes, who had the biceps, who had the you know, like if you had a car and they were like 15, 16, they were so cool. And I got in, not through making fun of them, but I got in through windmills. I got in through breakdancing. And then I got to be, and maybe that's what skating was for you, but they let me in because at 12 years old, I was doing head spins. And so they're like, oh, we need this little guy because we could win competitions. And you know, the smaller you are, and maybe with skating, because you always look young when you're doing your skating, you probably look like a younger kid doing the amazing tricks.
Yeah, I look like a little kid that are freaking trick flipping 10 steps.
Right. It's like let's sponsor this guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
that was definitely my avenue.
Yes, and so you AWOL'd, and I know as adults, you know, you it's kind of funny, but as a 12, 13-year-old, I mean, it's life or death. It's a big deal, and so you basically broke out of prison is what you did during the day, and you were crying, and you know, the thing we had with AWOL was like, I think we were allowed to not to like talk to you guys and prevent you from doing it. But once you hop the wall, I don't think we chase after you. I don't think we're allowed to.
Yeah, I think you guys even stated that too. Like, if you guys want to AWOL, you guys can AWOL. We're not going to chase after you.
Right.
But, you know, we're here for you. And I remember after anyone AWOL'd, we would have like a group meeting, like immediately after, right, for like an hour or two.
Yeah.
Talk through it. Go through the motions.
Yeah. You know? But you're the Finding Nemo. You're the one that got away. And you went home. You started smoking again. Started skating again. But your mom didn't send you back. I think she accepted you. You didn't want to be there, so nothing's going to change. And then from there, slowly, it seemed like you turned your life around. So tell us about once you got home, how did you slowly get back on track to now you doing film and are you a financial advisor? What do you do?
I'm a consultant.
A consultant,
so basically, I consult on operational procedures.
Yeah. And also, you graduated from UCLA, correct?
Yeah. I transferred from El Camino to UCLA.
Wow. That's impressive, man. I mean, that's impressive. That's, I went to Cal State Northridge, dude. So anyway, okay. I don't know. All right. So you go home, you start skating, you start doing weed again. Tell me the character arc. Tell me the trajectory of Joe at that time.
Yeah. So I got home, I think I was 14 after rehab. Took me 5 years of just drugs, skating, partying.
Yeah.
To kind of like realize there's something more. And then I hurt my back, had to get back surgery. So I couldn't skate anymore. And I was almost like, I was devastated, right? Like this is skateboarding was what I was put on this earth to do.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do it anymore.
Right. Right.
So, one of my best friends who passed away recently, Romero Escalera,
How did he pass away?
He basically sat me. What's up?
How did he pass away?
Oh, so supposedly it's a suicide. But they found his body in the port of Long Beach. So he jumped off like he jumped off the Vincent St. Thomas Bridge.
Wow.
But there is some shady stuff going on.
That
we don't need to talk about, but
okay.
So we don't really know what happened, but he basically sat me down one day, told me I had all this potential and that I was basically ruining my life because I wasn't like skating at the level that I was. I was just going to the skate park, drinking and doing drugs. Right.
Right.
And then he's like, you got to chill on that. Like focus on school. You have too much potential. I'm like, you should transfer to a good school. And then he was a photographer, so he taught me photography, and I started doing photography or photographing my friend skateboarding. And you can't be drunk doing that. So that kind of helped me get away from that aspect of skateboarding. And then when I got hired at the El Camino College bookstore, my boss saw my photos and was like, hey, like, I know the professor who's in charge of the newspaper, like, go apply to be a photojournalist. So I did that. I fell in love with photography. I fell in love with journalism and the aspect of like truth finding through that. And that really made me like put a fire under my ass. Like I need to transfer to school. So I got really involved on campus, started caring about my grades. Still was like a couple A average student. But yeah, I ended up getting into UCLA, transferring. I was political science at UCLA with a concentration in the Middle East. And then my last year, my roommate was an entrepreneur. He started a company, I think, sophomore year. So he really motivated me, like, hey, like, I could be my own boss. So I started taking finance classes, did finance, started looking for a finance job instead of, like, going the political science route. And then I ended up getting hired by Deloitte, doing corpus operations consulting, did that for a year.
Wait, real quick. I don't know anything about that world, but Deloitte, they're a pretty big deal, aren't they? They sound like they are.
Well, they're considered like the big four. There are four big accounting firms.
Okay.
It's EY, Deloitte, PSG, and then another one. But
wow, nice. Okay. Yeah,
they're so big that they have like three like different other firms. Like they all have consulting firms now as well. It's a cool job. It pays really well.
Sure.
But this wasn't what I wanted to do. And then my high school friend, asked me to audition for the lead role for a short film on centering three skateboarders growing up in Los Angeles. Mm. And I was like, yeah, I always wanted to act. I never told anyone I wanted to be an actor, but I mm-hmm. wanted that. And then here my friend Grant was asking me to do this. So I show up after work to this skate spot in San Pedro in a suit, right? this director looks at me, get out of the car. I can see it in his face. Like his whole face just drops. Like, damn, this is not the guy. I introduce myself and I'm like, hey, do you mind if I just change really quick? I don't want to skate in this suit. So I literally put on some board shorts, a Hawaiian tee, probably not even buttoned or halfway buttoned, right?
Yeah.
He saw my tattoos and everything. He's like, you're it. And then he saw
Why did you show up in a suit?
Oh, because I was coming from my job.
Oh, from work. I thought you were like, okay, got it. So then when you took off the suit, then he saw Superman. So he saw Clark Kent, and then you ripped that suit off. And he's like, oh, okay. Now he see the guy with the cape.
And he saw the spunkiness. The sarcasm.
Sure.
And that kind of fit the role. So I got that role. Wasn't getting acting roles after that, because as everyone who is an actor knows, it's very hard to break into the industry. So I just remembered one of my really good friends, Austin Anaya, in college. We were at a party really late night doing stuff mm-hmm. we shouldn't have been doing. But we ended up talking, because he was a rapper, made music. He was like, you're a photographer, let's make a music video. As kids in college do, we always talk a lot, but we never finalized that. So I just reached out to him after this short film. And I was like, hey, Austin, do you want to still do this music video? I'm willing to help fund it so I can direct this. Right. So I did that. I think it was like $3,000 for the whole music video. But then that music video, after that music video, I reached out to my friend, mutual friend of Ramiro's, who is now a designer. And he was making these cool designs for like upcoming rappers. We call them SoundCloud rappers mm-hmm. around Long Beach. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to him to do a fashion ad for him, to direct a fashion ad. And he was like, oh, I'm actually going to be putting out my first collection, and I'm throwing my first fashion show in a couple months. I kind of want to do a documentary. Can you do that for me? And then me knowing how much production costs, I was like, no way.
I'm doing a documentary.
And then I like kind of like relaxed, slowed my role, realized that I can make it happen if I want to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So I basically funded 80% of the doc myself, designer throwing money when he could, which I really appreciate. But that documentary, one of the models was another rapper. He saw the Austin and I music video, hired me. And then it's just been like, from project to project, I've been getting jobs, right?
So you're directing music videos.
Yeah, I'm making money. I'm making way more money directing right now than acting. So
wow, that's amazing. So then are you also doing the finance or no? You're just doing the creative.
Oh, so I went part-time. I live in Santa Monica and I pay heavy rent. So that supplements my rent. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to like take crappy acting jobs, and I can direct here and there.
What's the dream for you now?
Martial arts.
Huh? Oh, which one?
So I actually train at the Inosanto Academy in Marina Del Rey. And Dan Inosanto teaches multiple martial arts. If you can see the schedule,
jeez,
he teaches literally like 20 different martial arts at this academy. So I do Muay Thai, I do Silat, I do Kali, which is Filipino martial arts, mm-hmm. a lot of dagger work, double sticks. I do shoot wrestling, which is kind of like just a Japanese form of BJJ. I haven't started BJJ yet, but I do Krabi Krabong, which is I think it's Thai weapon fighting.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing, man. So what's next for you? What is your passion now? Are you going to go full time into directing and acting and all that creative stuff, or will you?
Yeah. So I'm directing and starring in my first indie feature. Mm. I wrote a short film I met this martial artist through a mutual friend, or I actually just met this guy at the gym, and I worked at a set on bench press with him. And then we started talking kind of like-minded. And then
sounds very LA.
This guy, Jordan Jones. Yeah. And then I talked to Jordan. It was supposed to be a 5-minute phone call, ended up being an hour long. He was like, hey dude, like if you want to be like an action star, you need an action reel. You can't just have an acting reel.
Right.
Like a 15 page short. Don't center it on like martial arts, but like add some action in there, add some dialogue. And then I sent it to a couple people. They all liked it. And then I realized if I'm going to be funding this, putting my 100% into it, especially because I put my own stories of growing up in Palos, like around Palos Verdes into it.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be more meaningful. So I'm now rewriting it into 90 pages.
Wow.
But so I have a fight choreographer. I have three other martial artists signed on to it. And then I'm working on this huge doc on the Iran Revolution that we're going to be getting. We're going to be trying to get finance soon. So when I get this finance, I will be transitioning fully to directing, because this is going to be, the scope of this project is massive.
Yeah. I mean, and also it seems like that would satisfy when you were in college and you wanted to study, well, I don't know what the term was.
Political science,
international relations.
I did conflict resolution in the Middle East. That was like what I studied.
So this documentary lines up with that, which is really interesting.
100%. I mean, the whole motivation behind this documentary was after Mahsa Amini was brutally murdered in Iran, there were so many protests. So I went to the one in downtown LA on October 1st. I just took photos. I found this really cool vantage point super far up. I walked up like 100 stairs to it. It turns out there's a security guard. He graciously let me in. And then there were two photographers from a very, very well-established publication. I'm not going to say which one it was because it'll be embarrassing for them. But basically this guard, it was me and these two other photographers. And then the guard was like, hey, what is this for? And them being the seniors, like 20 years my age, I was like, I let them talk about it. And they were like, oh yeah, some girl, Mahsa Amini, got killed in Iran. And it was like, for what? And they kind of blushed and didn't really know the backstory, the context behind this.
Mm.
So with my background, I spent 15 minutes relaying it, because this all stems back from the 1925.
Yeah. You know?
Like, and people don't realize this. So I told them that. Then when I got home, I was just kind of thinking about it, like, wow, if these established photojournalists don't even know what's going on, I bet you most of the people at the protest didn't know what was going on. So then I was like, the Western audience needs to be able to understand this, the context of this revolution dating back from the 1920s, to fully support this,
yeah,
to fully like make this revolution happen, right? And then through a mutual friend, I reached out to a producer who I was actually just getting production insurance for my projects from. And then he's Iranian. Actually, he's Baha'i, which is a very small community within Iran that has been persecuted for the past 40 years, since 1979. Like, persecuted. Like, they're killed in the streets, you know, with no justification. So he basically, I asked him, like, hey, do you know a cinematographer who's Persian? I want to bring on a female Iranian cinematographer to this. And he was like, yeah. And then I sent him my concept and he loved the idea. And then I brought him on as a producer. He found my cinematographer, Gelare Siavash, amazing cinematographer, well established, done so many documentaries. And then Sharuz also brought on another producer. And now it's just blown up to this project where we're trying to get $1 million in funding. Wow. And we're very confident we're going to get that, because Gelare and Borna and Sharuz, they're in the big leagues.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm so grateful to them, because they're kind of teaching me the professionalism and the workflow of the big leagues. Because I'm in the middle, the small leagues, right? I'm doing 10 to 15, 20K budgets. Very small.
But you know, you're a great example when I think about your story of someone who, quote unquote, as a kid was a fuck up, right? According to society. And then has really gone on to find traction in life. And now you're doing things that are bigger than you. You're making art. It's amazing, man. I'm so proud of you and where you're at. Yeah. You know who else was on this? Halen. You remember Halen, counselor?
Halen.
Halen.
Female.
She was Halen. There, I think, on the weekends. Anyway, she's one of the counselors.
I do remember Halen. I had the biggest crush on Halen, actually.
Sure, I think a lot of kids did, yeah.
I think everyone had a crush on Halen.
Right, right. Yeah. And she was Yeah, she was on this podcast, and she's also doing amazing things. She's in Hawaii. She created a whole afternoon or an after school kind of center for kids to have resources, and it's like a whole after school program thing. Yeah, with her daughter, which is really cool. And
it's amazing.
I think Eugene is in school to become a well, you know him, right? To become a social worker or a therapist or something.
Oh, really? Because he was wanting to do film back.
Oh, is he in film? I don't know.
No, he wanted to do film back when we were kids.
Oh, back in the day, yeah. But I think
I love that for him, though.
Oh wait, no, it's not Eugene. I'm sorry. It's the other. It's Sam. There's a guy named Sam, and I think it was Halen's. Okay. He went to school to become a social worker or a therapist or a counselor. So yeah, there's a lot of stories of the kids from that those days detention, if you will, who are out just, you know, doing amazing things. And now you guys are all, and you were the younger one. So I mean, I would imagine like Emily and Dustin. Are they now in their 30s? They got to be in their 30s now.
They have to be. Yeah, they're at least 2 or 3 years older than me.
Holy
Emily was like 5 years older.
Yeah, yeah. And she was, well, she came in already, I think, like 17 or something. She came in toward, you know, she wasn't 12. Yeah. But it's such an honor for me to, I guess because I'm on social media, I might be easy to find, but it's such an honor for me to hear from you guys. I wouldn't say I'm famous, but I get emails or DMs once in a while, and it's from people from the past, and it's really rewarding, man. And it's really great to see your face. You, of course, you look 27 now, but you look exactly the same, like the spirit of who you are. And I'm sure me too, right? The spirit of who you are is still the same. Yeah, you were always smiley. You were always a kind of a happy kid. Yes, you were angry, but you know what? Everyone there was angry. And I don't know if you knew this, but I was also angry. I loved you guys, but I didn't want to do that job. I hated it. Nothing wrong with the system and the people I work for, but I wanted to be Dr. Drew. I wanted to like wear, you know, designer pants and have a private practice and drink lattes.
Oh, yeah.
And the universe threw me into nonprofit with a bunch of adolescents, some trying to fight me, some trying to be me. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? I hated it, man. But I think it was treatment for me. I think, and you may not know this, but you know, all the groups that we ran and all the shit that me just hanging out with you guys, taking you grocery shopping and stuff. It made me grow up, you know, it made me, I was in treatment as I was helping, you guys, I feel like. So. Yeah, it was wild. I mean,
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, behind the scenes, I was I wasn't a cool guy with the little BMW. I was a guy with a broken heart trying to rebuild my life after a divorce, man. So, lots of learning and growing.
Very well then, man. I mean,
acting.
At least looked up to you over there.
Oh, thanks, man. I don't think it was because of me. I really think it was because everyone there didn't have a dad. And when we don't have a positive male role model, especially boys, we get thirsty for that naturally. I mean, even when I was 12 or 13, I idolized all the older kids and I wanted to be them and I wanted to be a part of what they were doing. And so I think there was a lot of that at OA, and I just happened to be older kid, you know? Well, dude,
that also translate to like what, cause you were saying a lot of people from OA are doing like amazing things now. I think people who come from broken homes that make it out of that lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
Really realize that there's too many broken homes around the world. And us coming from that, we want to help people get out of that.
Yeah.
Break the cycle.
Yeah. Right?
And it's possible.
Well, also your generation, I shouldn't say your generation, let's just say you, you have tremendous optimism and you've always been a very smart kid. And so,
thanks, dude.
Things are working out, man. So yeah, I'm proud of you, and thank you so much for contacting me. I'm assuming you found me on social or online somewhere.
Yeah, I found you on you're on my Explore feed a couple, like maybe a year or two ago.
Oh, okay,
like,
yeah,
John Kim.
Yeah,
and I was a little afraid to hit you up, and then when you sent out that mentorship thing, I was like, this seems like the right time in my life to reach out to John.
Well, you also don't have time. You don't have time to be an intern. You're out making documentaries and shit.
No,
but I'm glad that you reached out, and I'm glad that we connected. I hope, because I see these, whether it's a podcast or a video, I see them as kind of time capsules. And I hope mm-hmm. that, you know, we throw it out into the ocean, the universe, and I hope someone else from that world sees it and they get, you know.
That'd be great.
Yeah, they get a kick or they get a smile or they know that, you know, as far as that was, that we're all out there now just kind of doing our thing and trying to be the best version of ourselves.
Yeah. And please, if you are seeing this, please reach out to either one of us because I will eventually be in a documentary. Not OA, but like that.
Yeah.
That industry. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey man, you're a catalyst now. So, like I was years ago and try to continue to be. And so, congratulations on, congratulations on really turning your life around. It's amazing.
Thanks, man. Well, congrats on all your success, man. It's really amazing and inspiring.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. All right. Hey, Joe, where can people find you to, watch your movies and do all the, things that you
did? So, my website is asianofilms.com.
You're going to have to spell that.
Okay. Yeah. No, 100%. It's ACIANOFILMS.com. And you'll find all my socials on there. There's really nothing on the dock right now since we're really early on the financing stages.
Yep.
But in the next couple of weeks, we're planning to have some big names signed on to it. So we will have a website or some place where you guys can go and look at the doc and support it.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for hanging out. Be well. Hey, you thanks, take Tom. Off, you take off. And then I'm going to talk another 5 minutes about you. So I'm going to talk a little shit about you.
Okay.
And then you can
make this it saucy.
This is me being lazy. Cause I don't want to edit this shit. You just leave. And then I'm going to, talk a little shit about you. And then that will give you reason to listen to this when it airs.
All right,
Joe. Great thanks, seeing you, man. You be so well.
Yeah. You too, man.
All right. Bye. Well, I just wanted to say it's really meaningful for me. You know, I talk a lot about our stories, and it's interesting because Joe writes screenplays and is a filmmaker now, and we have that in common. That's what I used to do 20 years ago. But I still carry the power of story with me today. And when someone from your past comes back and you could actually see them and allow yourself to be seen and have that connection, you can connect dots in your story, you know? And one of the things that Joe didn't know that I was a miserable fuck then. I had to put a smile on my face and change my attitude because I wanted to be there for the kids. But I was going through my own shit. And for him to come into my life, as I say, for him to fall from the sky and for us to connect really makes me, it's meaningful to me. It makes me believe that my collision, not only with him, but nonprofit and all that was meant. And it was such an integral part of my story and really repositioned me. I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, we go through things sometimes at the time we don't like them or don't want to be in that or you know, it's a challenge for us. And then you look back and you're able to connect dots and you then see those times as gold, you know? And so the 5 years I worked in nonprofit, I think that's when I did the best work as far as I ran three groups a day, 5 days a week, and was hanging out with these kids. And even though my ego and what I thought a therapist looked like didn't match that, now looking back, that was my prescription. You know, that was what really lit a fire in my belly, especially for men and men's work and all of that. So anyway, Joe, thank you for contacting me and thank you for helping me make sense more of my story. And I'm so proud of you, Joe. I hope you keep leaning forward and continue to reach out, and we'll keep in touch. Thank you for listening. Be well.